Good evening, and welcome to Simple Action Proof of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Matt, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Matt.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to live differently.
Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs that way. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the steps discussed tonight. This evening, we're going to be discussing steps 5, 6, and 7. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Paul and Kevin. I'll read the first paragraph on page 72, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the read. All right. First, I'll read the 5, 6, and 7 steps. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. And 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. And on 72, we'll start with, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the 5th step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome the drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary, until they told someone else all their life story.
Hey everybody, my name is Paul and I'm an alcoholic. Hello. Man, when I got to step five, I was ready to get rid of this garbage because I am the type of guy that will only do what I'm supposed to do when my back's against the wall, I'm completely cornered, everybody hates me, and my life is melting around me. Then I might consider like doing something else. And so, you know, when I first came to AA, my butt was on fire and I still did nothing. Like I still did nothing. I knew drinking was tearing my life apart and I knew I was in the right place, but I just was unwilling to do what you guys told me to do because I thought I was better than you. I thought I was smarter than you. You ate out of a trash can. You've had 12 wives. You guys are losers. And I really just thought that I was better than everybody, which I know sounds silly, but it's the truth. And so I didn't do anything. Like I did nothing in AA except sit in the meetings. Like meeting makers make it. Well, no, meeting makers make meetings. It's the people that do the steps and do the work that get the results. Nobody, I didn't hear that. You guys all said it. I didn't hear it. So I did nothing in AA for about a year. And I sat here dry and miserable, wanting to pull my skin off, and I hated my life. It got worse. I should have just drank. It was terrible. And so, you know, when I finally said, okay, I'll do the steps, I would love to say that I launched into vigorous action, but I didn't. I was ready. I did step one, two, and three, because that was just my sponsor kind of explaining real simply, like, hey man, you're screwed when it comes to alcohol, and how's your life been the last year? It's awful. Okay, cool, check. Step one. He goes, all right, well, you know, AA's helped 10 million people get sober. Can you believe that AA is bigger than you? I was like, okay. He's like, all right, so let's make AA your higher power that can relieve you from the insanity of the first drink. I was like, okay, check. Step three. He goes, hey man, can you just turn your will and your life over to AA? And I was like, oh, okay. Step four, nah. Like, I was cool with step one, two, and three. Cool, I got it. And he was like, all right, now into action. I was like, nope, can't do it. And I sat on that fourth step probably like 6 months. And it got so bad. I had always known all of these things, but I'm a world-class rug sweeper. Right? Like, nah, I don't want to think about that. And I will just forget about it. Like, it's crazy. Like, I'm insane when it comes to that because I can just sweep it under the rug and forget it's ever there until I see that person. Or I see a show and this reminds me of something. I'm like, uh-oh, nah. And I'll just sweep it back under the rug. Well, eventually, that rug got so, like, crazy. I couldn't even walk over it anymore because there's so much stuff jammed under there. And the whole time, my sponsor's like, hey, man, there's an outlet for this. Do the columns. Like, he showed me how to do it. I just refused because I wasn't in enough pain. And so when I finally was like, I have to do this. Like, I have to get free of this stuff. It was real easy. I banged it out in one day. Kind of a big game-changing experience because I realized a couple things about myself that I was really ashamed of, but could face it because I was in enough pain. So when we got to step five, I was ready to go. And I just remember, you know, when we were talking about they talk about how, you know, we might be a little apprehensive. Nah, I was ready to go. And what happened was I was overwhelmed with this sense for the first entire, like just the first time in my life, I was humbled by what I saw on that paper. I was humbled enough to realize that if I held on to this stuff, like I knew I was screwed. I just knew it. There was something about it. My sponsor was like, hey man, do you want your membership card to AA or you want to go get drunk again? Because those are really your two options. You can get this done or you can go drink because that's where you are. And I was like, I believed him. And that humbled me enough to be honest for the first time in my life. Like I'm a pathological liar. I have two of something. I tell people I have three. There's no rhyme or I don't know why. I guess it just makes me feel better about myself. I don't know what it is, but like I'm a constant liar when I came in here. Maybe about 40% of the time now. But the when I was willing to get honest, man, that was a game changer. That was the first time in my life. And so when I sat down and I gave him all of this stuff, I told him everything, I really got a huge relief. I didn't realize I was carrying all this crap along behind me, like that guy from the Christmas story. Was it Marley? He was like, got all these chains and boxes. I had no idea that I was doing that until those got cut. I felt free, man. I know that's not everybody's experience with step five, but telling that man my whole story and seeing him yawn and just be like kind of bored about it, that really freed me. I wasn't the devil. And I was free of all this stuff that I was just carrying around. And that's what I got for that reading.
Hi, I'm Kevin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kevin. And,
once I got to step five, I don't really think I knew like what was going to come from it. I was once I came to the rooms, I just happened to have a group of friends that I was always hanging out with, and they had worked all the steps, and they were always talking about the steps, and that's your key to freedom. And so before I did step five, you know, at step four, I drug my feet, and my sponsor really didn't bash me about it. He just kind of let it go. And then one day something came up, I think, in a meeting, and he mentioned it, that I was procrastinating, and to go back and look at the other steps. And step three became really a glaring to me, like, am I turning my will and my life over to God, or am I not? You know, and you know, today I can see where the biggest part of my character defects is I want to control everything, you know, and lack of power, like it says in the book, was my major dilemma, because every thing that I thought was going good, it was good to me because it was what I wanted, and it made me feel like I was in control, and so it kind of boosted the ego. Everything that was bad was what I didn't want, and so it made me afraid, and so I wanted to control more. So control was always in there, and that was the greatest freedom that I got from completing my step five, was it wasn't so much about what I said, but just that I was willing to give up control of all these things that I was afraid of, and things that I thought were so bad, or just everything that was bothering me, you know. And one of the things with my sponsor was he wasn't very pressing. So there was things that came up after we finished my step five. There's things that still come up, you know, that we'll talk about. You know, I've been to Matt Talbot, you know, I've talked to the priest there, you know, we've had special time with him, everybody there. And things always come up, and it's always learned that it's not so much about what I'm saying. It's just about that, am I willing to give up control, you know? Because when I'm trying to control it, for me, that's me kind of taking my will back. When I'm going with what is, it usually ends up working. Life usually ends up going pretty peaceful. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily what I want, or like I'm fist pumping in the air. It just means that at the lower level, there may be waves, but at a deeper level, I'm okay with life. And so that's kind of how I looked at where step five gave me the greatest freedom, because by giving up that control and telling those things, I wasn't ashamed anymore because I didn't have control of it. They were all out. You know, my sponsor knew everything about me, and it really released me from a lot, and it brought me closer to the world, because whenever I was in my judgmental mode of you, everything I'm judging you for, I could go back and find in my inventory. And it made me go, man, that's okay, you know. Now, if you ask my teenagers, that ain't always, I can be kind of judgmental and get into it with them. But I still have that. That pause will come later, like, man, I remember when I acted like that. Or I remember when I said that. And it just gives me more. It gives me a more calmer way, because then it keeps me in my lane and helps me mind my own business, because I've been everything that I've judged. And my step five shows that. Thanks.
Thanks.
We're now on page 73. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. We want to enjoy a certain reputation, but it knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking.
Yeah, man. Double life. That is literally the story of my life. I'm a really kind of weird drinker. I've been with my wife 20 years, and she's never seen me drunk. I've only been sober 9, so I drank 11 years of our relationship, and she's never even seen me drunk. You know, my mom's known I've been a potential alcoholic since I was like 4, but she's never seen me drunk. Nobody in my life has ever seen me drunk. I have always kind of either hid it or found people so far away that it will never come to light. You know, there were times where when my wife and I first got married that, you know, it really worked out well, and a lot of you have heard this story, but she's Filipino, so she's only 4'10", which is amazing if you're trying to hide stuff on top of the fridge. So, you know, I'm that guy that everything's good, Paul's working 3 jobs, he's a man, he's got a tie, and I am desperately like freaking out to drink, and I will wait for somebody to like go to the bathroom, pour a drink, hit it, wash out the glass, dry the glass, put it back upside down in the thing, nothing ever happened. Just playing video games when people come back downstairs. Like, that's how I drink. Like, I always kind of envy people that are just able to tie one on and not give any F's. I give so many F's about what people think about me that it's been paralyzing my entire life. So I really live this dual life situation, like, hard. and that is one of the causes of my tightness, because it's all about to unravel at any time, and I am freaking out. I love what you were saying about control. Like, when I'm in fear, I control it more. I've just always been in fear. So I've just been trying to control everybody's perception of me. And I see a lot of people's heads nodding. You must understand what I'm talking about. Like, I just spent so much of my life doing that. And shucks, that didn't even stop when I got sober. You know, I went through this period where I just could not stop smoking, man. And I would lie to my wife that I wasn't smoking, and I would like have a cigarette, but then I would go in the bathroom, wash my beard, and get up in my nose with my pinkies with the hand soap, because, you know, you gotta wash that off. And I would go to kiss her, and she'd be like, "You've been smoking. How'd you know?" She's like, "Cause you smell like hand soap, idiot, and cigarettes. Like, what are you doing?" So I'm so excited about this idea of a double life. There's something about it that just excites the hell out of me. I love it. Even if I'm not smoking, it would be, I was really into ultralight camping equipment. So I would, you know, I couldn't have it sent to my house because I don't want anybody to know what I'm spending. So I'm gonna have it sent to my mom's house because it's a safer neighborhood. Then I'll pick it up, never tell her anything about it. And then I go backpacking. She's like, "Oh, when'd you get that?" "Nothing." Right? Like, I just love this double life. It's just, it's so exciting for me. But it's also the thing that killed me. It was the thing that was slowly killing me. Because I could not live under that amount of pressure without hitting that release valve. The release valve was my drinking, and that's the only time I really ever felt right, because I was just myself. Because my guard was down, and I wasn't trying to impress anybody. Although I was hiding from people while I was drinking, so well, that's weird. But anyways, that you know, I never woke up kind of like ashamed. There was a couple of times where I did some silly stuff, but like, it was that double life that really, really ate me alive. And just that idea of that under constant fear intention. God, does anybody understand what I mean when I'm like, my shoulders were in my ears? Like, that's how I live, man. I used to think I had a migraine problem or that I had to go to the chiropractor to get relief. That's not what it was. I was so afraid of life and so afraid of what people thought about me and doing the right thing and the wrong thing. It was insane. And so if you take drinking away from that, oh man, multiplied by 10. And that's how I came into you guys. I came in just a bleeding mess, just like, just about to explode. And the only relief I've gotten from that, besides muscle relaxers, is living a life based in AA and doing what you guys told me to do and growing a relationship with God. And when I'm right with all of that, and I'm calling people and I'm doing this thing and I'm, you know, telling on myself and I'm doing the things that you guys taught me, dude, my shoulders are down. I'm fine. Everything's fine. But that's when I'm living in the truth. That's when I'm living in the light of the Spirit. And that's when I'm living in AA. Only time that happens. When I take my will back, it gets weird. I get tight. And things get weird again. And that's just my experience with that.
I, too, lived a double life. And it was always... But the funny thing with me is, I was trying to impress you and not let you see what I was scared of and everything that I was doing. And I had all these things I'm doing in my life and trying to hide from you, but I thought you knew anyway. And it was scary, you know, because, and that's where alcohol really, really helped me, because a lot of the worst things that I was ashamed of was done when I wasn't drinking and I didn't have that medicine, which gave me the control, you know, to change. And so as my drinking got more, as I got older, it was even more nerve-wracking, because then I thought you knew I was having marital problems. I thought you knew that my kids were crazy. And I thought, not only did I think you knew, I thought you would think all those things and think I was a piece of crap. But the reality was, I was the only one really thinking that and believing it. And so it really drove me in this circle of really just chasing my tail from shame to control with drinking. Now I'm mad because I'm drunk all the time and can't really get anything done. Shame again, and then I'm going in circles with it. And just to think, man, I remember one incident. I had choked this guy on the boat, right? And this was me. This is the analogy of my life. We were working under an airplane, and he was an E5, and I was like an E3, and he was a little guy, and we were having a hard time getting this tank up on this airplane. And before I knew it, I had got pissed and like grabbed him by the throat and choked him. Not like to violently hit him, just to mainly control him from talking to me, because he was like kind of chastising me. And before I knew it, his eyes got like really big, and his name was Sarge. And I said, "Please don't tell on me." And that's really how I live my life. I thought you were gonna tell him. I thought I was doing all these things, and the world just knew, and I was just telling on myself. So I was always acting like, "Please don't tell on me that you know all these things, please." And really just pleading with the world. You know, I had a manager one time. He called me on it, and he said, "You know why you're always ducking out and not wanting to talk to managers? Because you ain't doing what you're supposed to be doing." That was 16 years ago. Man, it still rings in my head today. Because I still have all these thoughts, you know, of inadequacy, looking for power and control and ease and comfort outside of me. And it's been relieved a lot by the steps. And how it's been relieved is because I know now that everything that I've always needed has been inside of me. You know, everything that I've needed, my higher power can provide. You know, I was reading step two yesterday, and it just stuck out to me. It said, "Restore me to sanity." It didn't say, "Make me sane." So it meant that at some point for me, I interpret as I was sane at some point in my life. But through my thinking and the covering up and everything that I was interpreting that was real, because my thoughts said it was real, I made into these, like, I don't know, delusions. And so that's where I've been restored to sanity, to realize that I've always been where I needed to be. And life's always given me what I needed to have, because I wouldn't make it to this point of sitting here talking to you if I never had that. And if I could have got that ease and comfort somewhere else, you know, maybe I wouldn't have been here. But the steps have been the only way that I've gotten that. And step five has been probably the most important, because that's where I was controlling the most of all these thoughts that I had, that I believed were facts that I held inside of me. Thanks.
All right, we're gonna turn the page to 75. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory, and we are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. You should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken the step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. Feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe.
That was not exactly my experience. I didn't feel hand in hand with the universe, but damn it, I felt a lot lighter. I remember I was sitting in the car, and it was early in the morning. It was a Sunday morning, and my sponsor, you know, he's sponsored a bunch of guys before, and man, he looked so bored. I was telling this man, like, every deep, dark, nasty, like, secret that I had, and he was just like, okay, what's next? And I was like, I was really just giving it, I was giving it all to him. And so then I started, like going into real detail, because I really wanted him to just, like give me some... Tell me I'm special. And that was one of the things that really, like, really came from my fifth step, was realizing that I'm not unique. I'm not some unicorn running around the world that's only done these certain bad things. I used to, like, over, like, self-flagellate with this stuff. Like, oh, I'm the worst. I'm just the worst. And the fact of the matter is, I'm just a sick person that's hurt people because I'm selfish. That's really the base of it. And when I go through a fear inventory, I'm just afraid of everything. And when I go through the sex inventory, I'm just kind of a creep. Like, when you can just kind of, like, simply look at it that way and I can, like, see that stuff, cool, let's go. We can get on with life. It was really the experience. I didn't have this, like, huge relief, but, man, I felt like I belonged in AA. That's one thing that my sponsor did promise me. He's like, man, you know, when you do 4 and 5, you're in here with us. You're not on the fringe. Lots of people do 1, 2, 3. You know, it's the AA waltz. 1, 2, 3, drink. 1, 2, 3, drink. Like, everybody does that. He's like, but when you really, really get in here and do step 4, and you come in and do step 5 with me and we clean house, you're in here. He's like, your chances of not drinking again for the rest of your life and for living a great life are vastly improved. You know, he really stressed, and I've had the privilege of sponsoring a few guys over the years, but the ones that that have gone back out and drank and that I've seen again, I always ask them, because it's right around this step. It's either, you know, if they've done step 4 and we've done a step 5 and they go drink again, generally something's missing. They've kept something to themselves. And that's been my experience with that. My sponsor told me that too when we were going through the step. He's like, look, man, I do not care if you burned an entire village of people to the ground in some third world country. Don't care. I need to know about it. He's like, I do not care what horrible things you've done. If you hide something from me, it's going to slowly eat at you like a cavity slowly eats, and then it's going to abscess, and you're going to go drink again. He's like, I 100% guarantee you that. Well, that scared the hell out of me. So I was like, I was saying stuff like, this kid on the playground made fun of me because I wore the same pants twice in a row. And I was getting in there because I did not want to drink again. Like, I was so afraid of, I just didn't want to drink again, man. I knew what that looked like. I just didn't want to do that anymore. And so, I gave him all of that. And so I did feel very, very connected to AA. One of my experiences, and Kevin kind of spoke to it, like, things come back to me. You know, I was about, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 years sober, and I was watching this show about this, like, serial killer, and something that happened in that show reminded me of something really depraved that I had done. Not going to go into details, but I was horrified, and I was like, oh my God, I have to go call my sponsor right now. And I, like, kind of stepped out. It was like 11 o'clock at night, and I called him, and I was like, I forgot this. This is what happened. And I thought he was going to kind of judge me, but he just kind of giggled and said, oh, that sounds fun. He was like... And that, just that relief from being honest with somebody, not having to feel like I have to sweep it under the rug, like, that's freedom, dude. That's freedom for me, because I would have held on to that and been like, oh my God, my wife's gonna find, oh my God. And I would have just been so ashamed. I would have started acting weird and living that double life again and hiding stuff. But I can be free. Like, the freedom for me is in the truth. It doesn't matter what I do. AA is full of degenerates. People that drank hand sanitizer to, like, get a fix. Like, guys, we are the bottom of the barrel. No offense. I'm in here with you. But the thing is, like, what do we have to be afraid of? What are we hiding from each other? Let's just, like, the truth is the freedom. And that's what I found over my time in AA.
All right. And so for me, I took my step 5. We went Seashore State Park. We got in the woods, hung out, and then we went over the columns, and it was very calm. But I did get those. Once I went home, and he advised me to sit down for an hour and kind of pray, and then it started coming back, you know, because I started feeling closer to God, and more so, I don't know if it was closer to God or more, I felt closer to myself, because I had always lived like a dual person. Like, I was in my head looking at the real Kevin saying, you piece of crap, I hate you. You know, you're afraid of this, you grew up this way. And I just always felt that way and felt so different. But once I took the step, you know, just for me, the freedom came from the willingness of it, you know, not so much about what I said, but just that I was willing, because I really didn't know where that even came from, to get with this guy and tell him everything and like listen to him, because defiance is a key part of my control, is I'm going to defy of what you say do. I don't care, you know, if it's, I always, every Christmas, I ended up with extra pieces to the toys, I just throw them away. My ex, she never cared. The stickers, I didn't put them on there. I wouldn't even wrap gifts. It just, everything that was supposed to be done, I wouldn't do it the way it was supposed to be. And so the freedom came, like, where was this coming from? You know, Kevin, just this willingness to take this step of revealing all these things that you were so afraid of. And I was like, man, you know, that gave me so much. I was empowered. I very much felt empowered, because it wasn't about the drink for me with this step. It was more so I kept hearing people say, if you don't want to feel the way you're feeling anymore, this, you got to take all these steps. Because, you know, with step one, I took that, and I was still maybe on a pink cloud from not drinking, but I still was feeling like crap. You know, I was feeling like I wasn't wanting to drink, but I didn't have any solution to certain issues that I was dealing with. And that's where the willingness for this step, I think, came from. God just had me in the right place, you know, and I think that, you know, the miracle was just working for me. Like, when I was dragging my feet, that I stayed here when I was dragging my feet. You know, when my sponsor called me on it, that I was willing to take action after he called me on it. You know, everything for me is, it sounds corny, but it's the miracle, because if I could have thought my way to these things, I would have. And so I was just given just the grace of just to come and stay, and then everything worked out. And so through the willingness of taking the step, it just allowed me to do, like you say, look people in the eye, because now I wasn't afraid anymore, because I didn't have any secrets to hide. I wasn't ducking and, you know, dodging people. I could smile even when things weren't going the way they were, the way they are, you know. And I could live life on life's terms. Thanks for letting me share.
All right, next reading is also on page 75. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps, carefully reading the first 5 proposals. We ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand?
My share is going to be real short on this one, because I did not do that at all. I kind of just went about my day. He told me to do it. I said, okay. And then I just kind of left. And that's what I've got on step 6. Or not step 6 generally, but that's on that part of it.
I definitely went home and took an hour and sat down.
A student. My God.
I definitely went home and took an hour, but this was very important for me, because just through the willingness, there were things that I had held to myself. And when I prayed about it, it was like things were shaken free, but they still were bothering me. And so I had to talk about them, you know, and that's it. That's another miracle, because I would have just kept those. Like, I don't gotta talk about those, you know. And one of the a huge, like, glaring thing was I went to the Matt Talbot, and that year I had taken my, the year I went, the head guy happened to be from the town I lived in New Jersey. And I grew up in Pittsburgh, but we lived in New Jersey for 2 years as a little boy in a project. And it was the worst time of my life, man. So when I meet people from Mount Holly, it's like I tell them where I lived in the garden in this project, and they just, they couldn't believe it. So I was having some problems and praying about stuff. And so he's telling the whole Matt Talbot that he's from Mount Holly. And I was like, man, okay, God, there comes a willingness, not necessarily my choice. I'm here, and then this guy is bringing this to me, and I say, man, I'm gonna talk to him. I want to talk to him about some of the things I'm dealing with. And I procrastinated that day. Well, the next day, he comes and sits by me at breakfast, and starts talking to me about. Didn't you say you were from Mount Holly? I was like, okay, God. And then he had his list filled out if he wanted to talk to everybody one-on-one, and he had one slot left. And we was ice cream social later that night, and then we talked and got it and got it over with. And it cleared up everything that I was holding back and that I was dealing with that I thought were such big deals. But where it really helped me was, is that by just taking that step initially, because it the willingness is the gas in the engine for me, just the willingness to take it, because then it will my experiences is it will free me up to be able to be like, okay, I did that, so I can take the steps again. I can take the next step and give it up to God or give it up to someone else. You know, it'll just like an amends, it'll just become available when I need it to be. I don't know if that's coming out right. But it just was so a miracle how God provided that for me, you know, but I don't think that would have happened if I wouldn't have stayed and taken a step from the beginning, you know. So that's my experience with that.
Thanks. All right, we're now going to be on page 76. If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us to be willing.
Yep, so step 6, here we are. It's such a, like, womp womp after you get done with step 5, because it's such a freeing thing. You're just like, what am I doing here? You know, so step 6, it's where we're entirely ready to have God remove all of those defects of character. And I was ready to feel better. I was ready to be a better person. I didn't know what that looked like. I was ready to do something different in my life. But my sponsor was really clear to say, like, you know, we're ready to have him remove him, and then we ask him to remove those things that stop us from being of service to others, right? Because if this was just a step where it's just like, okay, God, I'm ready, and he just shoots a little moonbeam on me and I'm good to go, then my experience is that I'm not going to grow spiritually. And to kind of make that point, like, I was talking to my sponsor maybe about, like, I don't know, man, maybe this is like 6 months ago, and I was like, dude, I am so sick of being a dirtbag with X, Y, and Z. I was like, when is this gonna be done? He's like, maybe never. And I was like, no, that's not what I wanna hear. I don't wanna hear that. He's like, no, Paul, think about it. He's like, you have certain character defects that are always gonna be there. The reason you have those is because they get you into enough pain that your only recourse is to grow spiritually. And I thought back on some of the things that had happened in my life over the past few years where I had really kind of seen some big times of growth. You know, my growth only comes from horrible beatdowns. Like, I have to get beat down and be humble enough and then become willing. Like, you keep talking about being willing. That's so key. Like, it's just so key. I need to be humble, willing, and honest. And if I can't do those, then life has a way of just kind of kicking me in the junk until I get there. And when I'm there, I'm ready to let go. I can't let go until I'm just beaten to the ground. I'm just the kind of guy that I am. Luckily, those character defects have been there. I used to see them as a liability, but now I see those are the things that are saving my life. Because this isn't just about not drinking. This is about growing spiritually, and I didn't see that at first. It, you know, it took me some time. Of course, not drinking is part of it, but eventually, I came to a point where I was like, meh, is this it? I haven't drank in a few years, and meh. And my sponsor's like, nah, man, now you're talking about spiritual growth. He's like, now your life's going to get real weird. He's like, right around 5 to 7 years sober, you're going to get beat down. And I was like, no, not me. Psych. It happened. And my pride and my ego put me in a position after 2 years of working with this group of people. I had treated them poorly. It came back to me and just obliterated me. It shook me to my core, and I had no recourse except to really... I remember having this experience where I was just so sad and scared, and I couldn't sleep. And I was just kind of like... not like crying quietly, but I was just about to cry, and I was laying in bed, and I was like, God, I just want to get rid of this. Like, I don't know what to do. I feel like garbage, and I hate my life. So I got on my knees, like, because you guys taught me, hey, man, if you got nothing else to do, hit your knees, pray for it. So I remember saying a prayer that I truly meant, probably for the first time in my whole life. Like, God, please allow for me to get through this, to be of service to the people that are right in front of me, and to just please just know that you've got this. And the craziest thing happened, man. I was okay. I was able to get back to sleep. And that was a moment where I truly realized, like, some of this stuff just kind of goes away. Some of these defects are just, you know, I don't lie as much as I used to. That's just kind of done. But there are certain things that pride and that ego and that talking poorly to people when I'm feeling insecure about myself. I need to puff up like a puffer fish to make you think that I'm awesome and treat you poorly. That still kind of pops up every once in a while, and it is humbling as hell. It reminds me of who I am, and it forces me to grow. So some things go away, some things didn't. You know, when we talk about being ready, I was ready to feel better, and I was ready to have him take whatever he thought was necessary. But I would have been really misled if I thought that God was going to snap his fingers and I would be, you know, God's little ray of sunshine. Like, that's just not what happened to me. But through good sponsorship and being tied into this program, I can see, I don't have those delusions of what should be happening. I have a realistic view of, hey man, you're a sick individual, and God will help you grow over time, but this takes time. This always takes time.
For me, for step six, a lot of the character defects they still can, you know, rear their head. I can still think very alcoholically in my life. But what the steps have given me is, you know, before I took the steps, every thought or feeling that I had, I thought I put an action to it, and it just got me in trouble because I believed that either most thoughts that I was putting action to were maybe bad or ones that I didn't want to be happening in my life. So I was trying to put an action to it, to control it, to put it back into my will and back the way I wanted it to. And a lot of times I would just bend the world and people around me and just everything to bend it to my will, to what I wanted. And through working the steps, when those thoughts come to me now, through working step five particularly, when those thoughts come to me now, because I still have the same thoughts sometimes, I know that a lot of times emotions and thoughts are lies when they come from when I'm telling myself. It's just me saying that whatever's happening shouldn't be happening. Bottom line, that's what it is. If I'm feeling bad about my divorce, it's because I'm not accepting what is going on or what is reality, and I'm thinking it shouldn't be, so it's causing me have this feeling. And if I keep going without this ease and comfort of this solution, I may have taken an action that could hurt me and other people to wrestle reality into what I wanted. And that's really where step six helps me. I mean, I pray twice a day or sometimes all day, but mainly it comes from, I've just been given a sometimes second by second reprieve of to not believe my thoughts at immediate action a lot of times. Yeah. That is very, so key to me, because a lot of times things will happen and I will get ready to react as the old Kevin, and then something will happen. You know, I was telling my buddy Mike, he makes these stickers, and he has, they say 164 proof, and a lot of people may have had one here. And this guy on a motorcycle cut me off on Monticello, and my initial reaction was to flip him off. And before I could do anything, I really don't know what it is, but it caused me to look at his helmet, and the middle of his helmet said 164 proof. So I knew he got that sticker from Mike. And it just made me laugh. It really made me laugh, because that is God, you know, because, you know, I've driven crazy before. I've maybe cut somebody off and they've interpreted it as me wanting to affect them as a person, and then they get pissed. Maybe I'm just rushing to get where I gotta go, you know? And so that's where it really helps me with step six. Just being willing and ready for them to be gone, it just inserts into my life a little pause that, Kevin, not everything you think, most of it is false. And even if it is true, does it need a reaction from you to try to change it? And when I don't try to change life, you know, the way I want it, it usually ends up going the way I want it, or the way I need it to be. You know, through giving up control, I said to myself the other day, my life became more controllable. And it's just a weird, you know, weird thing. Thanks.
All right, last reading is on page 76. When ready, we say something like this: My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step seven.
Yeah, man, I really paid lip service to six and seven. I'm going to be honest with you. I just kind of said I did them so my sponsor would help me move on to step eight and nine, which I knew was going to be me making amends and feeling better about myself. So my initial experience with this really was just, can we just move on? Like, cool. I need to say sorry to some people, so can we knock that out? And so coming back around, you know, like being here long enough to take some people through the steps or to kind of come back through the steps a couple of times, I really have had an experience where hold please. Man, I don't know. The most I have for this is that when I am in enough pain, I'm such a reptile. When I'm in enough pain, I will hit my knees and ask for God to remove these things. And the craziest thing is, He always does. The crazier part is, I keep letting it get so bad that I have to get there. And, you know, one of the things that I've learned over time is that the more in touch I am with you guys in the program, and the more in touch I am with, you know, my sponsor and with God, and the less lies I tell to my spouse and to people at work, and the more that I'm more humble and honest and willing, I act in a way that I'm just free. Like, I don't know how to say it better than that. This idea of asking God to just kind of take over is relatively new to me. It's so embarrassing that I've really just kind of fully took step one, like about 9 years into this thing, where I know that I'm going to screw it up when I touch it. So I'm like, you know what, God, you just let me know where you need me to be and I'll be there. It's just like I do with my wife planning our family affairs. And no, nobody else? All right. Anyways, So with this, I am, because AA has taught me, you know, what you guys have taught me, I know that this is the answer. when I first went through this step, didn't care. I really just wanted to feel better. Anyways, that's an incomplete answer to that. Thank you.
For step seven, it was really, it's so small in the book. And then me and my sponsor, we read it in the 12 and 12, and it can be kind of, 6 and 7 can be kind of confusing. It were confusing for me. But what I've gotten from the book, every day when I hit my knees, I just pray, because I know God already has all of me. I just pray for Him just to allow me to stay present and to guard my reactions, because that's really where I've always gotten in trouble, where I'm trying to get you to read my mind, and I'm in your mind, not minding my business, and hoping that you're minding my business so that you know what I'm thinking, so you do what I want. And so that's really where I need God. I pray for God to have all of me, because when I got my will turned over, having all of me and being able to do His bidding means that whatever happens, I can look at it in my life as God's will. I can look at it as, this was supposed to happen. And I don't get too high or too low about things. I can kind of just navigate through them easier when I'm thinking in that, like, I'm okay. There's nothing that I never needed that I didn't have. And that by taking step three, it allows me to be in this and just be able to do His bidding and just live His will. Thanks.
Thank you, guys. Anything burning desires? I'm going to wrap things up with something. 5, 6, 7. It's not necessary, but
I'm going to leave it. I'll just muck it up.
I don't have any burning desires.
All right. I'm going to pass the 7th tradition basket here. The 7th tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supported, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the 7th tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supported. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, you may want to remember that the dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any AA-related announcements? Grant?
I'm Grant.
Hey, Grant. Grant.
Some groups of elections. Tonight, as you can see, we have a little bit of an unusual setup in here, and the church has been kind enough to help us with that setup. So in the returning favor, if you guys could help us out, move the chairs, stay the piece back around these tables, round tables over here.
Hey, Ralph.
The Little Day Annual Picnic this year is going to be on September the 15th from 9 to 4 o'clock, and it's going to be at City View Park in Virginia Beach at that time, Kensborough Road and Centerville Turnpike. There'll be food, you can bring this if you wish. There's going to be a 50-50 raffle there and whatnot, so just come out and enjoy yourself.
Thanks.
Hey, JT.
Friday, August 30th, a homebrew candlelight. Again, is having a 34th anniversary, and we're having an evening, so come early and bring dish if you wish. With some fellowship and some good food.
Thanks, man.
It's about Bowman and Pollyanna.
Any other announcements?
Alcoholic David.
Hey, David.
Our group never announces any of our events until it's inside of 30 days before the event. So I'm not announcing this event. I'm just telling you there's some pink flyers up here for something that's happening on September 2nd, right here in this room. please take them and take them back to your groups and announce it for us. Thanks.
All right. Speaking of which, Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. And newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety we would like to welcome you?
Jason Alcoholic.
Hey, Jason.
Oh, Jason. Welcome.
Hey,
welcome.
Got literature on the table over here, like you mentioned, also with the pink flyers. Let's see. Sponsorship is in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, can we thank Paul and Kevin?
Woo-hoo! Kevin! Yeah! So willing.
Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the steps discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza Del Sol, which is down Colonial Avenue right before the train tracks. Anyone, can we get a volunteer to read last two paragraphs on page 164?
Hey, JT.
Asked to leave us out, so I'll do that. Our Father,
our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power and the glory.